Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Soundscape Vietnam. My name is Jeremy and I'm your host. Today our guest is Phuong Nam Hoang, also known as Haley. Haley is a Saigon-based Vietnamese vocalist, MC, and musical theater enthusiast. Haley, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you, Jeremy, for having me on Soundscape Vietnam. And this is actually my very first time being on a podcast, so a tiny bit nervous, but I guess we're going to have a lot of fun today.
Yeah, don't worry about that. So I just mentioned that you're living in Saigon like me, but is this where you're originally from?
Yeah, it's actually where I'm originally from. I was born in Saigon in 1992. Of course, I'm 100% Vietnamese. I was born to my Vietnamese parents. A lot of the times, I get mistaken as a foreigner.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I think it's probably of my English accent whenever I speak English. I don't know if that's like something that I should be proud of or what, because people often mistake me as a foreigner. Yeah, but yeah, I live here 100% Vietnamese. I mean, I'm a big fan of fish sauce, gom tam, and everything else. Yeah.
Well, that's how you can prove that you're a real Vietnamese. Just drink some fish sauce.
Yeah, I can't live without fish sauce, man.
Oh, I think that's a compliment about your English ability that people mistake you for for a foreigner. So what was it like growing up here for you?
Growing up here, at the very beginning was a little bit rough, because back when I was young, my mom, she basically worked a lot, and the majority of my time that I spent at home was actually with our housemate and my dad. And but other than that, everything around me was surrounded with arts in general, and particularly with music, because my parents, they're very both musical. Mm. My dad actually listens to a whole lot of jazz and rock. He's like a huge fan of the Beatles, the Bee Gees. He even listens to Black Sabbath and Nat King Cole, Chuck Berry, and oh my god, you name it. And my mom, she is a huge fan of pop and classical music, so I basically got pretty much the influences from them. Yeah, growing up, it was a little bit rough, but my mom and my dad, they always infused me with music and movies and all that stuff. So I grew up watching and listening to a lot of the American pop culture. Yeah.
Okay. And all the different groups you named, it sounds like you got hit with a lot of different genres.
That's true.
As you were growing up. So is there a particular genre that you were drawn to when you were a kid?
That's a very, very tricky question. I mean, I pretty much listen to anything that I feel great. But if I had to choose one genre, I think I would go for the oldies, particularly in the rock and jazz category, and a little bit of classical as well. Yeah.
Okay. And do either of your parents play an instrument?
Yeah, my dad does. My dad plays the piano and the guitar. And my mom, she plays a little bit of piano as well. And they used to be in a church choir.
Oh, okay. Cool. I was also in the church choir for a few years when I was younger. And my mom was in the choir as well. It's a great way to learn to sing better, I think.
That's right. That's so true. Yeah.
So you had this musical family background, but when did you discover that you had a talent for singing?
Oh, probably very late. I think to most of the kids out there, they actually discovered that they could sing by the age of like 4 or 5, or maybe 5 or 6. But I actually discovered my passion for singing back when I was 10, and I remember very vividly. I think I saw The Hunchback of Notre Dame by Disney, and I was so fascinated by the music itself. And there was this one particular song that I remember. It's called "God Help the Outcast," and I remember singing along to it on a daily basis. And so, yeah, I found out that not only I was drawn to music, but I was also drawn to the genre, musical theater as well. And I started singing back then, but I never even dared to do it in public. I would constantly say no. And whenever my mom, she told me to sing, I was like, no, I can't sing. I sound bad. I was so, so embarrassed. I could only sing to myself. Yeah.
Right. So there were people telling you, oh, hey, you've got a really nice voice. You should perform somewhere. And you were like, no, I don't want to.
Yeah, I would say no, like on a daily basis, constantly. I would definitely say no because I was too embarrassed to be in front of people. I mean, I was having this kind of like pressure of like, what if they laugh at me, or what if I make a fool out of myself? Most of the time I said no, I wouldn't even dare to go on stage. So I would just basically sit in my room with my very own Walkman player and then just belt myself out. So yeah, if you asked me to sing back then, I would say no.
So what was the breakthrough? What made you perform for the first time?
Oh,
in public.
Yeah. Also another story.
Okay,
it was actually pretty funny. I remember it was back in grade 10. We were having like a talent show right before Christmas break. And it was like weeks before the talent show that me and my friends, we decided to sign up for a performance. And of course I sing, and my two other friends, one of them played the guitar and one of them played the bass. And we decided to sign up, and me having the fear of singing in public, I was like, F it, I'm gonna go for it, no matter what happens. If all else fails, just smile, because I did it anyway. And right on that day, we actually performed a song, an acoustic version of Monsoon by Tokyo Hotel, because I was a huge fan of Tokyo Hotel back then. Probably our performance was the only like acoustic rock performance on that day, and we went last.
Such a tough spot to be in.
Yeah, we went last within the lineup. So right before I got on stage, I got a stomachache. I mean, it actually happens every time I go on stage. I have a stomachache. I think it's probably because of the nerves that I develop. And probably I was being way too excited. I don't know. But yeah, I got a stomachache. But once I got up there, the stomachache was gone. And as we performed, we decided to be spontaneous because the original song itself was in German. We actually performed in English, but then towards the end of the song, we decided to be spontaneous and we sang in German for the last chorus.
Wow. And how did that go?
I mean, I had no idea what I was singing. I thought it was just like... probably I was singing in gibberish. I don't know. But then, we got like a special prize from the judges. And that was actually my very first time singing in public. And I got way over stage fright. Yeah.
So from then on, you were good.
Yeah.
No problem at all.
Yeah, all good. Even though the stomachache is still there.
Right.
Whenever I get to perform, probably I'm being way too excited that I get to perform. But yeah, once I get up there, everything's fine.
It's funny that you have a stomachache before you perform, because I think...
Yeah, what happens to you?
Well, I was going to tell you, it's kind of embarrassing. But I feel like I have to go to the bathroom, even if I just went to the bathroom. And...
Yeah, right.
And then it goes away when I start.
Exactly. You literally have to go to the bathroom, even though you've already gone to the bathroom before. But there's just like this urge to rush to the bathroom one more time.
Yeah, it's like this pressure. It's like, if I don't do it now, then I'm gonna be focused on that while I'm singing,
and then it's gonna
mess up my singing or performing, whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's funny that some people have that. Like us, where you have some physical symptom of like nervous energy, I guess.
And I think it's like a ritual for every single performer out there as well. Of course, everybody is different, but for you in particular, you have to go to the bathroom one more time in order to get yourself ready. Yeah, I think I pretty much do the same thing as well. I also have to do like a lot of warm up in the bathroom before I go on stage. Like, I make like the craziest noises in there that you can ever imagine. Yeah, as vocalists, we are that crazy.
Do you do the faces in the mirror or just
noises? I just like wander around the bathroom and like utter the ugliest sounds that I can ever think of. But I guess we do share something in common. Go to the bathroom to make sure that everything's fine.
That's funny. I wonder what kind of weird things people do out there in the world. I'm sure there's something much weirder than visiting the restroom first. After that first performance, did you feel the need to keep performing more? Was that like a I'm hooked kind of moment?
Oh yeah, definitely, because right after that, my very first time being on stage, I realized that, hey, I can actually do this for my own joy. And the more I do it, the more I fell in love with it. And it's just the power of really inspired people with music and to really tell my very own stories. I mean, even though I mostly do covers, but I try to kind of like fit myself into the other shoes in order to tell a story through a song. And I think that's just really amazing, you know. And I feel like a few people out there, even though they sing well and they do covers, but I feel like there's not much story to tell at all. It just sounds very bland and pretty much exactly the same. So I've learned a lot of lessons about performing, particularly in doing covers and trying to convey my very own stories through a song. And Just everything, really. I mean, the more you do it, the more things that you learn along the way.
So even though you're performing covers, you're not just singing it like note for note, you're making it your own kind of style.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, yeah.
And thinking about the connection between your own life and the words that you're singing and the feeling of the song.
Yeah, that's very true. Right. Yeah. Not only that I really have to rehearse through the whole entire song, but I also read about the artists and the songwriters, I mean, the reason why that they wrote the songs as well, in terms of like, I can really understand their context and the stories that they put into. And it's just something that I love to do before I get to do a cover, yeah.
Yeah, I think that makes the performance much stronger when someone puts in that kind of effort instead of just like, oh, this is a good song, I'm going to sing this, instead of doing like any kind of background research.
Yeah, it would be better to do some research before you do something, yeah.
Yeah, and so you've performed at a lot of different venues around the city, right?
But the one place that I was mostly stuck to was Hard Rock Cafe, because I spend the majority of my time there.
Okay. And for the people out there who aren't from Saigon, Hard Rock Cafe is one of the best music venues, I think, in the city, just because of the professional setup and all of the space. And unfortunately, it's closed now. It might have new owners in the future, but right now it's closed. So how did that opportunity happen for you to regularly sing there?
I guess we have to go way back to 2016. One of my friends, he was actually a loyal customer there. Well, we were both loyal customers to Hard Rock Cafe. And he was friends with an artist manager there. And the artist manager was like, hey, we were putting up this show for our local Vietnamese artists to really showcase their talents, and we're gonna do it every weekend from Friday to Sunday, I think so, yeah, weekly. So weekly acoustic nights during the weekends featuring local Vietnamese artists. And then my friend was like, do you want to be a part of it? And I was like, hell yes, I'd love to be a part of it. And yeah, I got started in 2016 and ended my journey there in 2019. So it was a 3-year journey. I made a lot of memories there.
Wow. So you were doing this like a couple of times a month?
No, we actually did it weekly.
Oh, weekly?
Like, every single week during the week.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. So how many songs would you estimate songs you sang like during that time?
So we had like me and one or two my fellow vocalists. Mm-hmm. And usually our set only lasted for an hour and 15 minutes. So during the whole entire set of the number of songs were around 50 to 20 songs around that. Yeah.
Wow. So you.
Yeah.
You learned a lot.
Yeah. And we divided our turns to sing. So after I finished singing and then there's going to be the other person singing and then the other person, and then it comes back to me. And we just went on and on like that.
Hmm. And yeah. And were all of these like English language songs, or did you do some Vietnamese songs too?
We actually squeezed in a tiny bit of Vietnamese in there. Two or three songs in Vietnamese, but the majority was English. Yeah.
Okay.
And each of us were specifically in charge of one particular genre. So for example, I mostly did the old school ones, and the others would do like let's say Billboard 100, and then the other would do like funk or maybe a little bit of rock and roll and all that stuff. So we were a pretty diverse group.
Okay, cool. And you've performed in other places as well?
Yeah, I also performed in one or two places as well. Yeah, but the majority of the time actually spent with Hard Rock Cafe. So we actually perform our acoustic set during the weekend up in the bar area upstairs. Mm-hmm. And there's also, do you remember the basement area where there was like a huge stage with live music?
Yeah, that's mostly where I've been. Yeah.
And we also got to perform down there as well, but only twice a month. Yeah.
Okay.
Our whole entire band. So we did the basement area shows twice a month, and then the weekly acoustic shows upstairs weekly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now that they're kind of in limbo, like we don't know if they're going to get new owners or what, and we've been in lockdown for a while. Is there any plan for you to take up more regular gigs, like when things fully open again here in Saigon?
Yeah, I would definitely be open to receive more gigs. I would love to sing at corporate events once again, because back then we did a lot of corporate events as well. It was really fun. And also, yeah, such more and intimate cafes like here in Saigon, we actually have a lot of live music sessions, so would definitely love to go back there if things are like back to normal. Yeah,
right, back to normal, key phrase,
back to normal. Not the new normal anymore, but real normal.
Yeah. Real normal.
Yeah,
so you're also an MC.
yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about that? Because I feel like that's sort of connected to performing.
Yeah, there is somehow a connection if you think about it, and you're completely right. I mean, the role of an MC for me actually came very spontaneously. I didn't plan on it to happen at all. Mm. I never thought that I was like a really great speech deliverer. I never thought of myself as an MC, but back in college, I was a very active member of my music club in RMIT. And we were having a music quiz for everyone to join. And they were in need of an MC who could deliver like the whole entire game in English, of course, in English. And they couldn't find anyone, and so they actually approached me and say, hey Haley, can you be the MC for the whole entire season of the music quiz? And I was like, I'm not even sure about it. I've never done this before. And then they were like, but you speak English so well. So we think that you would be a perfect fit. And I was like, wait, speaking English well doesn't mean that you got to be a great MC.
No, right? It doesn't. No, it doesn't.
It doesn't make you a great MC at all. But we were in like a shortage of time because they couldn't find anyone to fill in. And so I was like, okay, I could actually give that a shot. And so, yeah, I think that's where it all began. I successfully delivered the whole entire season of the music quiz, even though there were still bits that I was a little bit, all over the place. And from then on, I was the MC for different events at my university, as well as some other events in public as well, but mostly in English. So I've been learning how to do my MC job in Vietnamese as well, because it's always been a struggle of mine doing speeches in Vietnamese, because whenever I listen to myself talk in Vietnamese, I would cringe myself out. I mean, I can be very expressive and all in English, but when it comes to emceeing in Vietnamese, I really have like a great deal to learn.
That's interesting. I cringe when I listen to myself speaking Vietnamese.
Yeah, right? We cringe whenever we listen to ourselves talk.
Well, yeah, that's true. When I edit these podcasts, it's difficult for me to hear myself. But is it the same way for singing? Like, do you feel weird singing Vietnamese compared to English? I actually do.
I actually do feel weird in singing in Vietnamese because I grew up listening to American music. And so somehow I have already grasped that whole essence of how American music should sound like. And I guess it's pretty much, it's somewhat the same with emceeing as well, with singing and emceeing, because you really have to use your vocal cord to do the words. And so whenever I have an MC gig, I really have to make sure that I warm my vocal cords really, really, really well, or else I would stutter on stage or I would crack in the middle, just as the same as singing as well. And I think in terms of preparing for your voice and your vocal cords, I guess they are quite so similar, singing and emceeing. Yeah. The main difference is that, with singing, you just sing the whole entire way through, right? But with MC, you got to have a script. Yeah, you have to prepare your script. Particularly, you have to get all the names and the titles of the guests correctly.
Right. Or their pronouns.
And their pronouns as well. Or Mr. and Mrs. And their titles and their company names, where they're from as well.
Right.
Or else they would like bug you the whole entire way through. Like, why did she get my name incorrectly? I mean, I've been there.
Right. Yeah. Especially if they're like from a country with difficult names, then
true.
That could be hard. I mean, that would be like me trying to pronounce 10 Vietnamese names. Like, I'm good at a lot of them, but there are some that catch me by surprise. I'd be like, oh.
It's okay. We learn we go on.
Yeah, of course. So back to, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about singing in Vietnamese.
Yeah.
So I've noticed at different Vietnamese events, a lot of the songs sound kind of like sad.
That's very true.
Even at weddings, there are a lot of sad songs, like about love breaking up, even though these people are getting married, and and about the war in the past, even though people are getting married.
My gosh. I never knew that. Wars?
Well, this was like a countryside wedding, so maybe that's why.
I see. Yeah, that's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah. So when you sing in Vietnamese, is the emotion different than when you're singing in English, even if the subjects are kind of the same?
I think it's someone different. I mean, with English, from my very own personal experience, I can be very, very expressive and sometimes very explicit with English.
Mm.
But with Vietnamese, you gotta, I feel like we gotta keep to a certain level of like, you know, not to be too explicit or not to be too expressive. That's why you see most of the Vietnamese songs are ballads, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, so yeah, there's not much space for us to really be expressive in Vietnamese, I think, since the majority of people listen to ballads, despite the fact that there are so many indie artists out there who are trying to make their way through different genres, and they sing in Vietnamese as well. I mean, I personally love them, but yeah, the majority of audience, they just listen to ballads. So I think being expressive and being explicit in terms of like singing in English and singing in Vietnamese are very two very, very different things. Yeah, okay, so okay. I feel like singing in Vietnamese, I have to keep myself very low. And I don't feel like I can express myself that much.
So it feels more formal.
Yeah, it feels more formal. I mean, at least from my personal experience, I think so, yeah.
So you kind of, it's kind of like unspoken rules that you have to follow.
Something like that, yeah.
Right, that's interesting. And then now, I guess, rap in Vietnam is completely changing.
Yeah, it's getting popular. Yeah.
And those guys are and women are expressive.
Yeah. That's something that I truly look forward to in our Vietnamese music industry as well. I mean, right now is the second season of Rap Viet, right?
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, you can actually tell that The very first season was so well received by pretty much everyone that they decided to put out a second season. So I'm actually pretty happy about it that we can finally be ourselves and we can finally see rap as a, you know, kind of like an expressionism of music rather than just be all traditional and all ballads like before. So yeah, I think that's a great start, yeah.
I wasn't originally going to ask this, but now I think is a good time. Do you mind if I ask you something a little controversial?
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
Okay. So recently there was news about a lot of people being angry about rap lyrics and about also not just rap, but like modern Vietnamese music. There are people here in Vietnam who think that music is becoming too vulgar.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about that as well, yeah.
Right, so if you're familiar with the whole situation, what do you think about that?
I mean, it has always been like that, you know, particularly when it comes to censorship, because here in Vietnam, censorship is very, very strict. That's why you see a lot of the movies that are about gangsters and violence are all banned from Vietnam, but they are very well received in other countries, right? So I think it's just the same with music. I think the older generations, they grew up listening to like a lot of old love songs and songs about war as well. And I think it's just the context of the cultural differences that they're not really familiar with. And so when it comes to rap or when it comes to movies about gangsters and violence, they're not that familiar with it. And so that's why they think that, oh, there's too much violence in there. It's too cool. It's too gruesome. You know what I mean? And yeah, I think it's just the context of censorship that has been going on and on and on. And I think living in a country in Vietnam is very hard. It's very, very strict when it comes to like explicit lyrics, explicit contents. It's the same with China as well when you release those contents. Yeah, so it really restricts the artist from being expressive and raising their own voices, despite the fact that they are very well loved by their international fans and fans from other countries, and the same with movies as well. So yeah, that's a sad reality that we have to that we have to actually live in. Yeah.
But it seems like there are two sides, right? There's the government side of it, like the official law, and then there's the growing side of younger people like expressing themselves in non-traditional ways and branching out into different genres and different ideas. That is growing. It's just maybe not going as fast as it could because of the law.
Yeah, it's because of the restricted law. I mean, it has made some progress, right? It has made particular and significant progress, but we still have a long way to go in order to for all of those genres and even movies about that can be actually recognized in our country. It still has a very, very long way to go since our restricted law and censorship are very, very strict.
Right.
Yeah.
But the internet does help a lot. Because, especially for music, because once it's out there, you know, it's impossible to delete. Like this article that I read recently, it said, I can't remember the name of the artist, but they released this song and then they were fined by the government, like, I think it was 35 million or something like that.
Wow. That's a lot.
Vietnam Dong. And they were told to destroy all of the copies, but it's like, when you're an independent artist, you don't just have a bunch of CDs sitting in your closet. It's all on Spotify and SoundCloud and Apple Music, and people download it. And so it's just everywhere. So
yeah,
that's one way, I guess, that people can kind of get around the laws.
Yeah,
using streaming.
Yeah, it's just really, really hard that we're living in a country where we are restricted to be vocal. And we can actually be expressive, but to a certain level, not way out, or else it would be a disaster if we got caught by the laws and the rules and all that stuff. Yeah.
Right.
But for rap, I'm not really actually like a fan of the genre that much, but I respect the rappers. Yeah. I respect what they do musically. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. There's a lot of kind of music that I don't like, but I respect the ability to make it because you still have to have some talent to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Well, we won't get too political because this isn't a political show. even though I studied politics when I was in university.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, so that can be a side chat. But now we'll go to a lighter subject, which is musical theater.
Ooh, my favorite thing to talk about.
So I've listened to a lot of your covers on SoundCloud, and many of them are from classic musicals like Les Mis is the most popular one you have. How did you become a fan of musical theater, and what is it that draws you to that genre more than others?
I guess it has a lot to do with all the Disney classics that I saw as a child, you know, from Beauty and the Beast to The Little Mermaid to The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Pocahontas. I mean, there is a lot of accents in musical theater in there. And also the Lion King as well. Probably the Disney classics that I grew up listening to, that I was drawn by the genre at first without me knowing that it was musical theater yet. I think it was back in 2008 or 2009. I was having a vacation in the States. And so me and my mom were spending our vacation with our family members in San Francisco. And my cousin, she actually introduced me to this one musical, and it's called Wicked. I guess you have actually heard of it, Wicked.
I saw Wicked, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not on Broadway, but I saw it at a regional theater.
Yeah, it's actually one of my favorites. So my cousin introduced me to that. We would listen like to the whole entire soundtrack in our car ride, and I pretty much listened to it for the majority of my time there. And there was this one time when we were in San Francisco, I noticed that my cousin was being sneaky. But I had no idea what she was being all sneaky all about. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what she was doing. And then she came to me and she was like, hey, let's go somewhere. I remember it was like 7 p.m. In the evening. And so we drove to this one theater in San Francisco. It's actually where Wicked actually began one of their very first shows in San Francisco. And me, I didn't really know what we were seeing. But I just knew that we were parked in front of a theater. Mm-hmm. And after my cousin, after she did like all the parking and stuff, we went inside at the main entrance. And I saw a poster of Wicked. And she was like, we're going to see Wicked. I'm like, for real? Are we going to see Wicked? And yeah, that was my very first Broadway show that that I had ever been to. Yeah.
Wow, that's a great surprise.
Yeah, that's probably when I got really into like Broadway and just everything about it. So then after Wicked, I began to drown myself in Les Miserables, The Phantom of the Opera. What else? Newsies. I mean, there are a whole lot of classics out there. Oh, even Miss Saigon as well. I love Miss Saigon. And Cats, you know, just the classic, yeah.
Do you have a favorite?
Oh my gosh, I have a bunch of favorites. But for now, I think I am so in love with Dear Evan Hansen, for now.
I don't know that one. I'm ashamed to admit.
Dear Evan Hansen is about this boy whose name is Evan Hansen, and he has social anxiety. Mm-hmm. But then one day he met this boy. His name is Connor, and Connor accidentally read Evan Hansen's letter. It was actually one of the letters that Evan had to do during one of his therapy sessions. But then Connor found out about that letter. He got so angry and he stormed out. And then days later, Evan Hansen actually found out that Connor actually committed suicide. And so his parents came to the school to see Evan, and they found the letter that Evan wrote to himself. But they thought that Connor actually wrote that letter, and they thought that the two were friends. And so Evan, being so social anxious and all that stuff, suddenly he feels like he really has to do something in order to, get some attention, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so he decided to fake his whole entire friendship with Connor. And so that's where the whole entire story begins, yeah.
Sounds intense.
Yeah, it's actually very, very depressing, but I actually love that musical. Yeah.
It sounds depressing.
Yeah, but the music is not that depressing at all.
Okay, I'll check that out.
Yeah, Dear Evan Hansen.
And if you could perform any role from any show that you know, what would you choose and why?
That's another hard question.
Just the first one that comes to your mind.
Okay, Elphaba from Wicked.
Okay.
Because Wicked, number one, it was the very first musical I saw, and then I could actually right away identify myself with Elphaba, the Wicked Witch of the West, because I don't know, there's just something about her that is nearly like 99% to 100%. She's just like me. I mean, she does everything with her heart, and she is not afraid of telling the truth. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of the people actually hate me for telling the truth, because I have always been the straightforward person. So I can actually identify a lot with Elphaba, and she's also very vulnerable at the same time. But simultaneously, she is very strong-willed, very empowering, and she does everything with her own heart and soul, and speaking the truth, speaking justice. That's what I love about her.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's a great character.
Mm-hmm. She's great.
I feel like I need to go listen to Wicked after this interview, because I only saw it once, so the songs aren't in my head like they probably are in your head.
Yeah, so, Defying Gravity was that was actually the very first song that got stuck in my head while I started listening to the whole entire soundtrack. Mm. I was like, this song, it felt like it was written for me.
Defying Gravity. Yeah, that's the one that I know the chorus, but I don't know like all the words.
Yeah.
So a little bit more about theater. I've been doing some research about traditional theater in Asia, like kabuki theater in Japan, and then of course in Vietnam there's water puppetry theater, which I haven't seen it here, but I saw a show in Hanoi for that. That was pretty cool. So these kind of traditional forms have been in culture for a long time, like many centuries. But when it comes to musical theater, sort of in the Western style, there's not a lot of it outside of China and Japan, and definitely not in Vietnam. So why do you think that this art form hasn't gotten a strong foothold here in Vietnam?
I've been thinking a lot about this as well, because obviously musical theater is not that well received right here in Vietnam. Probably it's only because people are not like introduced to the whole genre yet. Mm-hmm. I think part of the reason why is that we have another genre, which is somewhat like musical, but we call it Vietnamese opera, Cải Lương. So we call it Vietnamese opera. So there's choreographies and they're singing the whole entire way through. So I guess that's the very beginning of traditional musical in Vietnam. And a lot of people are familiar with that genre as well.
Mm.
And Vietnamese opera is so well loved by everyone here in Vietnam. And there's also another type of stage production as well. Well, it's not musical, but it's like stage plays in Vietnam, Kịch Nói. And it's very, very well received. So I think those two main art forms, Vietnamese opera and short stage plays, are very, very popular in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And it is so well loved by most of the Vietnamese audience that once musical theater comes into the place, people are like, I can say that it actually feels great, but people are a little bit reluctant to see a whole entire show for 2 hours straight where they're singing and original songs the whole entire way through. I mean, there was this one experience that I got when I saw Les Miserables, the 2012 musical movie version, on the screen. As I was bawling my eyes out, I heard people in the background saying, "Why there's so much singing? Why are they singing all the time?"
It's like, that's the point.
I mean, that's the point. That's what musical theater is all about. They have to sing.
Right.
And there is a very few amount of dialogue in there. And I guess people are very so familiar with Vietnamese opera, Cải Lương, already. Mm. And so once musical theater comes into the place, it's going to take them a while to really adapt the whole situation. So that's the main reason that I think musical theater has not yet made the big, big breakthrough here in Vietnam. I actually have a friend of mine who is currently pursuing a master's degree in musical theater in Philadelphia. He's Vietnamese as well. And so I really hope that once he comes back, he's gonna educate everyone and bring a whole lot of cool aspects about musical theater here, because that's actually one of his biggest wishes.
Okay, yeah, that would be great. Do you have any thoughts of what it would take to make it popular in Vietnam? Like, if you had unlimited money and influence, what would you do? What's the first thing you would do?
Oh my God, that's a very, very tricky question. I haven't thought about this, but we also, with with a limited amount of budget, I have already seen some like small productions of Les Miserables in Hanoi. And yeah, the whole entire set was really, really simple. So it was not like a big gigantic set, but they included every single song, and they I think they had every single song written in Vietnamese as well. So that's the best that they can do. So yeah, I think it was very, very well received by everyone in Hanoi. So yeah. It's still like we still have a long way to go regarding the talents, because there are very, very few talents right here in Vietnam who can actually sing like a 2-hour show. Mm-hmm. You know, with Broadway, right? They do 8 shows a week.
Yeah.
That's a very, very long run. So, I mean, our physicality has not been built to that level yet in order to do 8 shows a week. So, right, right. I think with the limited budget, the best thing that we could do is to do like a live show, kind of like a tribute show, performing all the songs from musical classics. Yeah. So that's, I think, the best thing that we could do. But in order to build like such a huge and gigantic set is going to take a long, long time. And there's got to be a specific venue, like different venues to do different musicals.
Yeah, I think some of the problems are money.
Money, yes.
Interest. And then having the venue itself.
Yeah. Because in New York, they have different theaters and different venues for just one particular musical. So, for example, in the Majestic Theater, they only do the Phantom of the Opera. In the Gershwin Theater in New York, they only do Wicked, for example. Yeah, so there's like a whole bunch of theaters in New York. So we are definitely missing the space for venues. Yeah.
Well, even one would be a big improvement.
Yeah, even one.
Just one in Hanoi, one in Da Nang, one in
Saigon. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, but money would be the big concern, and then the interest. Would people be interested in listening to like a 2-hour show the whole entire way through with many amount of dialogues, yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's definitely something that a lot of people in America don't like it either, and don't really understand it, because they think it's like too corny, too cheesy.
Yeah, cheesy, that's the word, yeah.
that's part of it too, but like you were mentioning earlier, with a depressing musical, there's all kinds of different stories, you know? There's stories that all people can relate to, I think.
Yeah, I think at the moment there is a whole bunch of musical that use pop music,
right?
Not like the traditional ones, the classical ones like a Les Mis or Phantom of the Opera. They're all semi classical, but for Dear Evan Hansen, for example, they do pop, and for Hamilton they do rap and R&B, and in The Heights they do Latino. So there's like a whole bunch of things out there that people can actually try out and to really see something that they like.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope that people all around the world appreciate it more, because I think it's something that is often seen as sort of a joke. Like,
yeah, too cheesy.
And yeah, too cheesy, too nerdy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, theater nerd, weird, yeah, theater kid.
Yeah. Yeah. we're being way too dramatic. Theater kids are dramatic, and all right. That stuff.
Right.
Oh, I believe that you actually told me that you used to do musical theater back in the States. If I'm not wrong.
No, you're not wrong. I did it when I was a kid, and my mom and my sister were also in a bunch of shows, at our community theater, and then. When I was in like middle school and early high school, I stopped for a while, and I was like more into sports. Unfortunately, I wish I had tried to do both, because I think my problem was that where I'm from, Southern America, it's theater is considered like a weird kind of thing, and going to school, being of school age, like middle school or early high school, is something basically people would call you gay.
Oh no!
You know, and say worse than the word gay. Times have changed. Calling someone gay is not an insult anymore. But when I was that age, like, you know, calling someone gay was like saying that, you know, they're not a man or whatever.
That's too bad.
So that's part of what turned me off for a while. And then when I was a senior in high school, the local theater did a production of High School Musical.
Oh, okay.
And my sister is a huge Disney fan. Like, she's been to Disney World in
Florida, right?
Yeah, but no, I was counting the countries. She's been in Japan and and France and
America. Yeah.
So she's a huge Disney fan, and so she was gonna audition for it, and so she auditioned and she got a role, and then I was thinking about doing it, but I didn't the first day, and then they hadn't found their Troy.
Oh, Troy. Yeah.
They didn't audition anyone that they liked to be Troy. And my sister called and said, hey, they've still got this spot. You should come. It's over, but they'll let you come audition. So I auditioned by myself, and I just did some choreography and like some quick songs, and a little bit of acting. And then they gave me that role, and I was so excited, and it was such a good time. That was in the summer and like the beginning of my last year of high school. Mm. And it was so fun. That was the first time I'd been in the lead role.
Troy Bolton.
I could probably sing all those songs. I remember all of them, and it was an amazing experience. And then I did one more before I went to university, Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, Fiddler on the Roof. Yes, I almost forgot to mention about that. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of my favorites. Both of those shows were the first sellouts in our theater's history.
Cool.
And our director was amazing. Those were like some of the best performing experiences I've had in my entire life. Cool. And then I didn't do it in university just because there wasn't time. But I would love to be in a show of any kind at some point again. That's one reason why I want it to be bigger in Vietnam, so that I can like get into a part of something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would also love to be a part of like, kind of like a Broadway tribute show, you know?
Yeah. That would be cool.
Yeah. Where they actually perform all of the Broadway, Broadway classics. And we audition for the show, and then we either get like a solo or a duet or whatever. I mean, that would be very cool for you and I to actually try it out. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's something that could be possible.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Instead of a long 2-hour show. Yeah.
Right. Instead of a whole giant production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Just basically making it like a gig, like a regular music gig, mm-hmm, but with just a little bit more performance aspect.
That's true.
That would be awesome. Good idea. And if anyone's listening out there who wants to set that up, then go ahead
don't
and do
forget
it
us.
Okay, so we're coming to the end here.
Yeah.
And I want to do a round called Quick Fire.
Okay,
so I'm going to ask you 10 questions.
All right.
And I'll give you 2 options for each question.
Okay.
No context, just answer, and then we'll go to the next one.
Okay, okay, cool.
Okay, so here's quick fire with Haley. Number 1, Ban Trang Trom or Ban Trang Nung?
Ban Trang Nung all the way, yeah.
Okay. Landmark 81 or Bitexco?
Bitexco, yeah.
A day at the beach or a day at the park?
A day in the park.
Orchestra or choir?
Orchestra. So epic.
Wine or soju?
Wine.
Ghost or witch?
Witch.
Rent the movie or Rent the musical?
Rent the musical. Yeah.
Good answer.
Yeah.
A big crowd that's quiet or a small crowd that's loud?
A small crowd that's loud for sure.
Broadway or West End?
I knew that this would come up. Broadway, because I would love to go to New York.
No explanations.
Broadway.
Last one. Long but minor success or brief but huge success?
Light but minor success.
Okay, so long but minor success.
Long but minor success, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and that's Quickfire with Haley. Woo! Good answers. I was hoping you would say Rent the musical because it's so much better than the movie.
Yeah, a lot of the times where the actual stage musicals are a lot better than the movie. Which is the same with Dear Evan Hansen. The movie sucks. But the stage musical is awesome.
Mm.
Like, I cried the whole entire way through. But the movie, the one word about it, it's just so badly executed. Mm. I mean, it's so... It's both depressing and weird at the same time.
Right.
Yeah, so definitely go check out the stage musical, Jeremy. So don't even bother to watch Dear Evan.
Okay, I will not. I will not watch the movie.
Yeah.
I haven't actually watched much of Rent the movie either because I watched.
Yeah, I haven't too.
There's a like DVD that was put together of the last 10 shows of the first Rent Broadway cast. So they like filmed their last 10 shows and then put all the best parts together.
Yeah, put all the best bits together. Yeah.
Have you seen that?
I think I have briefly seen it, but not the whole entire way through.
It is so good.
Yeah.
Watch it. I'm sure you can legally download it.
Legally. I actually do watch a bunch of bootlegs.
Oh, that's okay.
Bootlegs. I mean, we all do watch bootlegs.
No one's coming after you. Don't worry.
Okay, I'll check that out. Okay,
for sure. I don't think any police are watching this show, so.
Nah.
Don't worry. Okay, so my last question, two-part question. Do you want to give any shout-outs to someone? And then also, do you have any current projects that you're working on or future projects that you want to tell us about?
I would love to give a shout out to my mom because it all thanks to her for giving me the love of music and the gift of music and always teaching me about passion and compassion and even kindness. And she's probably one of the biggest inspirations why I do music. And big shout out to Big Mama. Yeah, the whole entire way through. For the current projects, well, I had just released my very own original song. I mean, it's still like a live singing version because I'm still planning for a studio quality version. So it's called Angel of Darkness. It's actually on my Facebook, my Facebook account. If you guys are interested, then go to my Facebook and have a listen.
Okay.
It's actually my very first song, so it's not that entirely great, but I'm so glad that I have finally put it out there. And I will continue to write more songs. And do as well as doing more covers and Broadway classics as well.
Well, that's exciting to have the first original. out there. I'll definitely listen to that.
Yeah.
And I will put a link to Haley's SoundCloud so that everyone out there can listen to her Broadway and other covers, which, by the way, it's amazing how many plays you've had on there. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. It's like almost a million just for one cover.
Really? I haven't even checked the numbers.
You had no idea?
I mean, I so far, I have only been aware of the number of listens and streams on one of my covers from Les Mis, which is I Dream the Dream. It just keeps going up day by day. But all of them, all of the plays added together, a million? Really?
Can you see that? 800, more than 800,000.
Holy shit, it's nearly...
Just for that one song, I Dreamed a Dream.
Holy shit, it's nearly 1 million.
Yeah, and the second one has 390,000.
Oh my god. Okay, yeah. I really have to be updated with SoundCloud because I haven't been on there for a while. Definitely have to amp up my game.
You know, I think that's a healthy thing that you're not just like checking it all the time.
Well, I used to check all the numbers all the time, but now, well, sometimes I still do, but I always try to tell myself, hey, the numbers don't really matter. What really matters is yourself.
Yeah, that's
and you love it.
That's a great perspective, but it is nice to have those numbers.
It is nice, though. It is nice. Admit it.
Yeah, and so everyone, you can go listen to all those covers on Haley's SoundCloud, which I will put the link in the description. And that is it for this episode. That does it for today. Thank you, everyone out there, for tuning in to episode 8 of Soundscape Vietnam. And thank you, Haley, for joining us.
Thank you.
Check the description again. You're welcome. Check the description to follow Haley and also to follow us on different platforms. Signing off, this is Jeremy. Have a great day. Peace.